Welcome to Spice World, Between Two Dunes, an inebriated exploration of Willis E. McNally's Dune Encyclopedia. My name is Derek.
And my name is Mike. Each month, we let you, our faithful Spice Worlders, vote on a topic from the Dune Encyclopedia. And Derek, this month, we got famous Harkonnens.
Right. I mean, it was between them and the Atreides. There's neck and neck. And it looks like the Atreides lost out. We've had too much of them.
Oh, man.
We do get the short stick when it comes to Harkonnens going through Dune.
That's true. We only see the bad ones.
Yeah, well, if that's what you were expecting to change. No, I got some philanthropists in here. We're going to be making cigarettes okay. Because that's what the Harkonnens do with their time. Yeah, it's very weird. Going through, actually, if we're going to compare and contrast the two families, too, It's interesting that, the Harkonnens every now and then get a good person, but the Atreides don't get an evil counterpart. There's never one Dick Atreides.
Never an evil Atreides.
Exactly. It doesn't seem like it. But we'll watch this family go through the ups and downs of history and kind of redeem themselves a little bit. Do you remember the last time we dipped into the Harkonnens?
I don't.
It was
it had to be halfway through the book.
Yeah, about when Piter died, the dark chapter in your life. Oh. But it was the one episode 21, so chapter 21. It's kind of that.
Oh wow, jeez.
We had two Baron chapters back to back where he talked with Jessica, and then he went off in another conversation. And so we did the backstory there, and we went from pretty much, I believe, the Battle of Corrin, all the way up through, our favorite Rock Karn.
I remember Rock Karn.
The Gunrunner who sort of unseats the entire Empire. And we even touched on, I don't know if you remember, a Count Pelagio Carino.
I recall the name. I don't remember what he was famous for.
He is the grandfather of the first Emperor.
And
that's who the Harkonnens claim ancestry to.
Dang.
That they're an offshoot of that part, and that's where they get their royal blood from.
Even though they had to buy their title.
Even though they bought their title, yeah. Okay. Many times removed. Whereas Leto gets to be the distaff cousin, which is a much closer relation. People believe that one. And then I think the other great one was Saadir II, who became Emperor Saadir IV.
Ooh.
You might remember him as Monkey Bite.
I remember Monkey Bite.
Remember Monkey Bite, yeah.
I can't forget the monkey bite.
A few months into his reign as emperor, he died in that garden. That poor bastard. And then we ended up with Rock Karn, who sort of left us at a precarious place where the Harkonnens had just come back from exile and bought their way back into the Imperium because he made so much money running guns and starting wars everywhere to the point where he got an emperor to resign. And they got a friendly emperor put in place who then was like, well, here's all your titles.
Oh, my God.
That was where we left off. So I guess with that, we can dive back into the present.
Yeah.
Or not the present, but present of this article. Any lingering questions for you on the Harkonnens, where they were? What we've gone over so far?
Not so far. I'm curious, what are you going to fill in the gaps with here?
Well, it's kind of like touch and go. They give me a short little paragraph for each person.
All right.
Right up until we'll do our last little bit on Vladimir's father.
Ooh.
And that one I got an actual kind of narrative story for you. But let's jump all the way back to 1988.
Imagine if you will.
Yeah. But 1988 after Guild. Because we're in these places.
I thought you meant 1988, our time, just before the wall fell.
I think that's why they chose that year. No way. I'm just they wouldn't have been wall was up till 89.
It was 89 or 90.
It was somewhere
I think it was 89. You're
November,
right.
The turn of the year. Who knows with the holidays? but there we have a new Baron, Vasily the Fourth.
Ooh, that's a good name.
Yeah, Vasily Harkonnen.
Yeah.
I like it. Space.
Very much a space name.
And, Mike, he claimed to receive a vision from God, and he founded the new Islamabahi Church, sometimes called the Last Church of Christ.
Oh, no. Yeah. Before everything got orange.
Yeah, yeah, right. Or, sometime thereafter.
The Last Church of Christ. Damn.
So, I guess we'll put that as a good Harkonnen.
So, Vasily... Mm-hmm. What's the etymology there? Is that Italian or Russian, maybe?
I don't know what the entomology for that, but the closest thing I actually was going to pull through was because it gave me, like, the last Church of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
We have, like, the first Church of Christ.
Oh.
And that seemed an obvious parallel for maybe, like, he's kind of building off of that. Mm-hmm. And that was established by someone named Mary Baker Eddy, and this is in the year 1888.
Oh.
Right? So, like, the year kind of correlates there. And then they bring up Islam Baha'i, which is an actual religion. And it's this religion where basically they recognize God as this supreme being that can't be understood.
Mm-hmm.
But he's omnipotent and he's in everything.
But he's there.
Yeah. And I came like, okay, I can see how that weaves through this universe mm-hmm. a little bit. And I was hoping to tie it to, like, the Fremen, but couldn't get there.
I feel like that might be a stretch.
Always yeah. is. You just never know with this universe.
That's true.
The planets the Fremen end up on. They're not on Arrakis yet.
That's true. Oh, where do we know where they are?
We'd have to dip back through the Zensuni
wandering. Sounds like work. Moving on.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, but I'm pretty sure that all started like around 4,000 or so. So I think
you're right.
They might even be back on old Terra still, kicking it there before they're kicked off for the first time and shipped along their way.
Wait, do we have a skilled flight right now?
Yeah, I think this is way too early in the history for the Zensuni to start really moving around. But that is our first Harkota. We get to dip it. So Vasili IV, he knocks that park, founds a new religion. Not too bad for Harkonnens.
Did he found it?
Yeah.
Okay.
He receives a vision. And gotcha.
So he didn't call it the last Church of Christ.
He might have.
You think so?
I don't know.
Oh.
I mean, granted, all I get is the what I read to you, Mike, is that short for him.
Okay.
We get some more with the others as we go on. So let's move on to our second.
Sure.
We have a Sivadar count.
Ooh.
This is Constantine the Second.
Constantine?
Yeah, he doesn't have an E on the end.
Not Constantine or Constantine.
Unless you pronounce it that way, but it didn't get the E, so I'm not going to do it. You've got to call it Constantine.
Constantine.
And I like
the thing they just ran out of room on his birth certificate. Like, sorry, buddy.
Or just like a simple clerical error. Yeah. I'm just like, didn't hit that key, you get that name. So this is one I really wish I could find a historical source for, and I couldn't. But the story is pretty engaging. In the year 2444,
all right,
Constantine II, he gives up all of his possessions, and he becomes a hermit. He moves. Oh. Do you know what planet he runs off to, Mike?
Not Tupile.
No, that would be very pleasant for a hermit. He challenges
himself. Does he go to a rough one?
Oh, yeah.
Is it Arrakis?
It's Arrakis. Of course it's Arrakis.
Oh.
It would have been better if it was like, I think Poratrin would have been a good one for the encyclopedia.
Right.
Since it's already like that pre-shitty planet.
Or Harmonthep. Ooh.
Ooh. He's the last one who got off.
Oh, no.
The last Harmonthepian. And so he goes to Arrakis. He becomes a hermit there. He's given up everything. His son is like, well, what the fuck, Dad? He assumes control.
I'm along with the son. Like, why? What did you do?
Yeah, you don't get to ask questions, apparently. So his son becomes the Sirdar Count, takes over everything. A year goes by. Constantine II's just like, I think I made a mistake. I made a big mistake. And he goes back
like, hey, can I have that all back? This place sucks.
He claims to have been deluded when he signed his abdication, and he has to sue for restoration of his lands and titles.
He's suing his own son.
His son, Pavel the Eighth, who is just like, no. And he refuses to give them back.
Dad, you left us a goddamn note.
They have to bring in the Landsrad as a court of last resort, which finally decides to split the estates and made both of them joint Sirdar counts. The only such instance in imperial history.
So weird. So weird.
This guy leaves. And it's like, never mind, comes back. And the son's like, nope. And you go through every jurisdiction in the courts until the entire Landsrad's dragged into this.
Man, when your Sirdar count goes out for smokes and doesn't come back, it's just the worst.
Yeah, I don't know what would be the Dune equivalent for that.
Spice.
Yeah, just going
to be a pack of spice.
A pint of spice, yeah. it's the ice cream, Mike. But so, like, I love that one. That one, the most to me, seems like there must be something where at one point a father and son had shared titles.
Like, in our history, you mean?
Yeah, I'm hoping.
I don't know.
And so, like, I tried to go for, like, within English heraldry or within, like, anything in the Roman Empire. Mm-hmm. and I couldn't get anything for it. Nothing came up with my short times. But that one, I love the idea of that, of the son being so jaded and just like, no. And
yeah.
Litigated out.
Well, and how long was he gone for?
Only a year.
Oh, my God.
Which is like, you consider travel times on that, too. What is he on, like 10 months on that planet? Yeah, of like, wherever he came from. So we move on then. We will leave behind our Constantine the Second, and we have another Sirodar count, Alexei Harkonnen.
I like Alexei Harkonnen. That one's definitely Russian.
Very. Yeah. Like, he didn't even try.
Although, I do want to say, is that the end of Vasily? Is that just all we hear from him?
The one who...
He made a mistake and then went back home? Or is Vasily a different one?
Vasily had the vision from God and founded the first church.
Right.
Constantine,
right.
Yeah.
So that's literally Constantine's only purpose in that book, is to be like, he made some bad choices.
His contribution to the Harkonnen record is, done fucked up. And, damn it. Well, Mike, first such instance in the Imperial history of splitting the count title. That's all they did. That's how they changed history.
Oh my God.
Their plans within plans. Stop there. You're not going to like Alexei then.
Oh no.
You want to know his contribution to history? Well,
let me hear Alexei.
All right. He was murdered by his wife in the year 2829 when he left her for one of his male slaves.
That's it. Oh my God.
I think it was a little more scandalous in 1984.
Probably.
Now I'm just like, yeah, he was going to be his own person. Good for him. Like, love yourself.
Jesus.
So we can throw these people out.
Sure.
Move on to some better ones. We'll try to anyway. A Baron Preeman Harkonnen Rabban.
Preeman?
Harkonnen Rabban.
That's really good.
And boom, boom, boom. We're throwing the other family into it. Now, he used his fortune to stage massive recreations of ancient gladiatorial combat in which men and beasts fought each other to the death.
Oh.
Like, massive.
Oh, wait.
On an unprecedented scale.
Really?
Yeah. He was doing, like, entire mock battles happening before.
Wow.
And it's like
a not even, like, this little, like, platoon of slaves represents the, like, not something out of Gladiator. Where you see them, like, replaying, like, one of the great battles.
Right. No, so that, I think he does it to scale, impression I got. I was like, I feel like this is a field, they're floating cameras.
They build a giant wall around a nation, be like, fight!
Exactly. We all sit back.
That actually sounds horrifying.
Yeah, but he's a Harkonnen.
He is. All right, this is very Harkonnen, though. I'm on board for the story.
You see, I mean, granted, so we're very far back. We're like 7,000 years in the history. So now we're starting to see them get their edge. Right? Oh. This family's really coming together.
Sharpening their knives.
Yeah. Deciding on like a thesis for what this is going to be.
Oh.
He was finally thrown into the ring by his wife and son when he threatened to disinherit them. And he was killed by the gladiators before his guards could intervene. So he's going to take them off the inheritance. They right over that wall we built.
Oh, and, my God.
Into the careening battle.
That's amazing.
That's a pretty good one. Another one where I'm like, that sounds like I want to have happened to a Roman emperor. Probably like a governor or something. Some dignitary in a smaller town. I can see them throwing him in like a dunk tank. Into a gladiator pit.
Dunk tank?
Yeah. But they finally just take him out. We can continue on. We go another very Russian name. This is, I think you're actually going to appreciate this even more so.
Okay.
Another Sirodar count. So we haven't moved up in that rank. We've gone from barons and counts, right? A little back and forth.
Right.
This is Petr the Third.
Petr?
P-E-T-R.
Oh,
right. Another fighter variant. Petr. And who was haunted by the fear of his own death. And who used artificial drugs and prohibited mechanical means to keep his withered body alive for 400 years.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Isn't that great?
It also feels like almost like a no-no, like borderline. You're getting close to that Butlerian taboo.
I think you passed it.
You think you passed it?
Yeah. I don't know how we got away with that. 400 years seems like out of line entirely.
Yeah.
Even for, like, when we're in the spice economy kind of deal. Do you know what finally did him in? I don't know, a rogue giraffe.
Oh, hey, that's as good as guess as any when it comes to encyclopedia. Like, you really got to roll the dice and just hit I'm feeling lucky on Google.
He died during an orgy, Mike, when his frail flailing accidentally dislodged one of his life support tubes.
Oh, no.
She said, oh, in such ecstasy. I imagine, you know, I like bringing up our Doctor Who references here in that, like, first season of Doctor Who, you meet the oldest human who is just like a skin
like
tight and a frame, essentially. Yeah. I imagine that's what this guy is. I'm just like, needs to be sprayed every 10 seconds to be hydrated. But that was Petra III. Died during an orgy, though. Like, I like it. Yeah. He lived like a Harkonnen the whole way through.
Great for him. Not so great for everyone else in the orgy.
No. Well, I mean, really? I don't think he was involved.
The next day, they're talking about police reports. It's just like, yeah, we didn't know until halfway through.
Yeah. He was unplugged? What? We tried to plug him back in. Well, we will leave Piter withered on the floor.
We now go, we're going to roll another family name in here. I don't think I'm familiar with this one, but Baron Stefan Harkonnen Montilla.
That's a good name.
Yeah.
Stefan Montilla Harkonnen?
He was a fighter, I think, by accords, as we'll be able to deduce from what happened to him, who, when he failed to volunteer to represent the Emperor in Canley, was ordered to be the target in the contest. Now, I'm assuming he's a good fighter because the Emperor wanted him. I'm like, first I choose you.
So wait. Read that one more time.
Well, it does say he failed to volunteer to represent the Emperor in Canley.
So that, I wonder if there's a little bit of a like, why aren't you stepping up, best friend? Did you say you had my back?
Something's happening here. Like, there's a lot to that scene.
There's a story that I.
What are you thinking? Like, unpack it for me.
Oh man,
what are you imagining? I want to say
he was like in really good graces, the Emperor, like, you know, sort of how Fenring is to Shaddam.
Yeah,
like, so they're good friends.
And I see Stefan kind of like an even suaver version of Fenring.
Stefan. Oh, man. It's definitely the Steve Urkel version.
Oh, yes. Stefan. For sure. Yeah.
I think that, he was buddy-buddy when Canley was called the Emperor. Emperor looked like, don't worry, I've got people to deal with this. And he looks at his friend and is just sort of like shuffling his feet a little bit. Like, hey, buddy. Buddy, what you doing?
Are you going to pick this check up?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I bet that was kind of a unwanted surprise that he had to force him to do it.
He doesn't even give him the chance. He didn't volunteer, so he targets it. Of like, now you're a part of Canley, and the Emperor has him killed.
Oh, I thought he like forces him to be his like volunteer.
No. When he failed to volunteer to represent the Emperor in Canley, was ordered to be the target in the contest.
Oh, shoot.
So, like, I'm thinking the Emperor started this Canley endeavor with, like, you know, going in with my boys. He's got the Harkonnens. Mm-hmm. And clearly, maybe that's when we have the the Fenring by his side, who are Fenring's dad. But, like, the Harkonnen was his main bodyguard. And then he goes in, and he's like, Canley. And then he looks at Harkonnen. Harkonnen just like, la, 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 la. And he goes, all right, well, Fenring. And then points to Harkonnen now, and... Yeah, we lost a lot of friends.
They just let him go on a planet and be like, first one to get the target wins. Cock their las guns and go out.
Cock your las gun, turn on your shields.
Oh, no.
Ooh, but that was all we got of Stefan Harkonnen Montilla. And I wonder if the Montillas will come up. Now, we get to the cigarettes, Mike.
I forgot about the cigarettes.
This one, I at first, I'm like, this is evil, but I guess it's kind of benign. But then I'm sort of like, but then why would you even make this? So, and it's a lady too. So, Lady Irina Harkonnen Lenkivale.
Oh.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Irina also Russian?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, she was one of the few scientists in the Harkonnen line, and she discovered a means of making tobacco harmless.
Harmless? So,
That's all it says.
Okay.
And you're like, granted, so this is, again, in 84. This has been like, we're on peak and we're still going with smoking. Right, we're not right. ready to quit yet. So this might have just been somebody's pipe dream of just like, wow, you get that fun there? Of,
and it's good for you. Yeah. Like the kicks of tobacco.
Well, like, that's the thing of like, it didn't make it good for you. It just makes it harmless. But at the same time, it's like, but why? <I'm> like, I just... Yeah, I don't even know what to say. Why not make it better for you? Like, I included a vitamin D or something. Maybe,
well, okay, like with most scientific endeavors, most things that you find and, like, commercialize, it's not something you meant to find. It just happens to, like, come across while experimenting, and you're like, oh, like, what can we actually do with this now?
Like, what do you think she was inventing that she came across this side thing with?
Maybe trying to make a new spice.
A new spice could be some like weird thing like that.
Maybe we can alter tobacco and sort of make it like spice, and we can grow our own spice on our planets.
I like it. I wanted to do some kind of maybe she was working with like some Malacca drug, something like that. I mean, maybe some came out with like, oh, this neutralizes nicotine. That's weird. Let me go off some weird sugar wire derivative. But that was her kind of only contribution, and I think the only scientist we will talk about on here.
That's it? That's all there is on her?
On her? Oh, yeah. Entirely. Oh. Yeah, it was a lady, Mike. We're lucky to hear we had her name. Oh,
my God.
They felt like they were generous enough.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, short and sweet on the cigarettes. Mm-hmm. Not much of that. You really got to speculate as best you can with it. And, like, so with that, obviously, what could I look up for a historical allusion for that one?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm like, yeah, like clearly we didn't do that. So it's not like somebody did make cigarettes harmless. And I can't think of like a parallel of a drug we've sort of like neutralized or something that was like an intoxicant with inside it. I guess maybe like non-alcoholic beer could be an equivalent for it.
I guess? I don't know.
That seems, yeah, it's the only kind of parallel that maybe come to mind. The other thing was sort of like, would it be like menthol cigarettes? I don't know. And like trying to reach back to like how they viewed them when menthol cigarettes first came out. Of like, they thought they were like something like, oh, it cures the problem, the irritation, right? You know, it heals it. It makes it all fine. So smoke these, give them to your kids. And
oh God, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know, it could have been something like that. But we'll leave Lady Irina behind. Let's move on then. We got another Harkonnen. We got a new title, too.
Ooh.
Lord André Harkonnen.
Lord André Harkonnen.
Okay. Heir to the county of Harkonnen-Turo.
To the county? Not even the country?
I don't even know. Yeah, I don't
know. He just owns a county.
I guess so.
Didn't you think it was a planet?
Well, I mean, don't you think it's what the counties maybe are now?
Oh.
Could be. I don't.
The planets are like...
Right, I'm making that up. I mean, just to justify count.
I mean, but if you look in terms of how it's like a feudal system with lords and serfs, then like I guess I could totally see the equivalent of that.
Sometimes you are a count in charge of like a planet when you're in like the sub, you know, the family, right, and stuff. Right, like Count Raban. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean, I could see that parallel. I just think that the fact that it's written as a county is kind of silly. It's just like,
definitely.
I'll give you this 1x1 foot patch in my back lawn.
I think you're gonna give it to him because of the next line.
All right, all right.
A renowned Cheops player.
Yeah, there we go.
This might be one of the best Harkonnens.
Was he in the encyclopedia for Cheops?
No, I don't think so.
We didn't have any like famous names in there that we recognized, like Harkonnens.
Yeah, it had like one made up player, right? That was like the best player.
It had a bunch of made up players.
Oh, okay. It was a bunch. Yeah, so but this guy's good. So we got renowned Cheops player. He's also a writer of sonnets. He's a lover and a raconteur.
Oh.
Whose handsome good looks and genteel manner made him the darling of the imperial social set.
Little Casanova.
Yeah, it really is. André Harkonnen, heir to the county of Harkonnen-Turo. You know he says that his entire... Yeah. Like, introduction. So
I think he's got a guy that always introduces him no matter where he goes.
Oh,
a herald. That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, I was going to say a hype man, but yeah, a herald is more proper.
Really, that is the hype man. I want a guy that,
but like every time he said, oh, got you. That's what this guy needs. And it was revolutionary for the time. I don't think anyone else had a hype man. Everyone had heralds going in a book. It's so old school. Now, We have all those great accolades to bring him in with, Mike, but there's one demerit. He was the subject of jealousy by Emperor Deathstrom.
Of course, the Emperor would be jealous of him.
Yep. Now, his foul murder at the hands of Deathstrom's hired assassin created such an outcry from the great houses and the populace in general that Deathstrom was deposed and executed by the Landsrad.
What?
Yeah.
So, it's not even just a matter of, like, Landsrad saying, like, Emperor, you can't do that. They probably fucking loved Andres. Like, this.
Yeah.
How could you not? How could you hate this guy?
He's so fun at parties.
Exactly. Yeah. We always invite him.
Now, I mean, I don't know what you get as the undercurrent here, but clearly Andre fucked his wife.
I don't think so.
If not his daughter.
No, but I think his wife wanted it.
Okay. You think there was, like, just a dance at a party? At a royal event?
She couldn't keep her eyes off of...
I think everyone talked to him.
Yeah.
I think even the maids. He's just the man. But yeah. So Deathstrom hires an assassin, sends him out, slays him in the night. He gets dragged before the Landsrad, convicted, executed.
Oh my god. Who's the emperor after that then?
Well, the third protectorate is set in place to keep the loyal claimants off the throne. Andrei's brother, Cyrodar Count Dmitri Harkonnen IV, and Dmitri's son, Vesevolod. This is going to be a really Russian one, because it's like V-S-E-V-E-L-O-D.
Oh, I can't help you with that.
So I'm going to say Vesevolod II and Vesevolod's son, Svitsevolod. I think that one got Swedish on me there. These guys are just all renowned. They basically go into being philanthropists from this point out.
Gotcha.
And all charitable institutions. Dang. Like, all into the public works. Traits not characteristic to those of the Harkonnens.
So I was going to say, we got a couple good ones here.
Yeah. So basically, like, the third protectorate comes in. They just keep, like, the throne in good hands. And the Harkonnens just, like, they really wash their hands of everything and be like, we're good.
So the third protectorate, what does that mean? What does that imply?
That is just going to be, like, a regency set up, and it's going to wait until, like, the next...
next official heir.
Yeah, that gets, like, kind of a consensus can come in to prevent, like, crazy civil war. This is very similar to, like, what Rotkarn got us thrown into.
Okay.
Where we were going from, like, region to region, and we didn't have an emperor for a little
bit.
We had a little protectorate set up. But I don't recall when the second protectorate was for you. Now... this is going to lead us to the end of this article, Mike. And it wasn't until Baron Vladimir Harkonnen XIX, whose struggles with the Atreides is recounted so ably in Hark al-Adda's official chronicles of that period, and was the 228th head of House Harkonnen. Oh, I got some redactions after that point.
Oh, God.
Well, so for the Harkonnen chapter... within the article and within the encyclopedia.
Right.
All that remains is what you and I have left in Dune, because we're not done yet. Just to let everyone know where we are timestamp-wise. We're so tantalizingly close. We just got to cap off the Baron's lifetime. So, flipping through, though, that article skips a famous Harkonnen.
Okay.
There's one very aptly missing here, and that is Gunsang Harkonnen.
Gunsang?
Father of Vladimir Harkonnen.
Oh.
Yeah. Do you remember anything about Gunsang?
No, I don't recall. I mean, Vlad killed him, I think, right?
Ooh, not quite.
No.
Vlad
was killed his mother, is I think what?
Mother.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And he was there the night that his father died.
Okay.
There was a banquet, and we went over the night that the Baron assumed power way, way back in Chapter 2.
Mm-hmm.
That first time we met the Baron.
Right.
I did a little Harkonnen backstory. So I kind of filled you in on what Vlad's life was like. So I want to tell you a little bit about his father, because I feel like, very similar to Leto, he lives in the shadow of his son.
Oh.
He's sort of lost, ultimately, even more than Leto, right?
Yeah.
You didn't even know this guy's name.
No.
Yet you've seen his, he didn't have anything to do with Piter. He did give the Baron his first Mentat, though.
Oh.
His first Mentat belonged to his father. So let's go through and talk about Cyrodar Baron of Gaiety Prime, father of Vladimir Harkonnen, Gunsang Harkonnen.
Gunsang.
Who will live to a ripe 51 years.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, good for him.
Right? Is that like middle aged with spice and everything?
It's very young for spice. I mean, that's young for us.
isn't Duke Leto like 50 or 55 when he dies?
We didn't get the Duke. Oh, I would have had something for you. I don't remember the Duke. I was thinking of the Emperor. Is like the best with that chapter header we get with Irulan giving us that, like, he looked 30 but was 80.
Right.
I think that's the best example I can kind of give you. But yeah, people do get very long lifespans. If you're like fully into spice, and this is referenced more in God Emperor and the later books, you can get up to like 300 years.
Oh, wow.
Like you're fully consuming it.
Blue
every
eyes.
Day. And everything. Yeah, yeah. From like birth to life kind of deal.
Wow.
And there's variations from the other things. A side little note. So I've been listening to Up to Heretics of Dune.
Yeah.
I can confirm for you, multiple galaxies.
Really?
Yeah.
By that point, or?
It would have been all of them. It just finally says that the Spacing Guild specifically goes between, it uses like the words for me, right?
Okay.
And I think it's safe to assume that it didn't change in that 3,000
years.
But like, we finally get it. Of like, we nail them down.
That's good to know.
Yeah, even though Daniel will be like, excuse me. I deliberately did that. Yeah, you put it on one arm of the spiral galaxy. All right. Enough of those side notes, but I thought you would appreciate
that. That's
really
good.
And this seemed the best place to put it, right? This is where all the offshoots go. So, the most colorful account of this unusual man is given in the diaries of Reeve Benin Seal.
Wait, what?
Reeve Benin Seal.
Okay.
He's a poet.
All right.
He's an awesome poet, Mike, and he just traveled to Gaiety Prime on two very key occasions. He was a friend of Gunsing's. Oh, Gunsing, I should tell you, he's like an aberration as far as Harkonnens go.
Stand-up guy?
Like a Leto kind of guy.
Ah.
He could have been it. Could have been it. And you know what? Actually, I should take that away a little bit. He does try to kill his wife's family. Let me walk that
There's
back.
There's always a black spot. Yep.
I'm like, no, you're not going to trick me this time. I know I got to chew on enough stuff.
It's still Harkonnen. It's just Harkonnen light.
I was going to be like, Atreides light? No, it's Harkonnen to light at best. Now, Reeve Benin-Seal, master poet. He writes two novels. The second novel I'm going to pull an entry from. This novel, he gives a very Harkonnen title. It is called Pearls Before Swine.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of just like that. Imagining that literally just a pig standing in front of a pile of pearls. they would eat it. That's all they would do.
I love, too, that all of our wines, like, involving the Baron always have, like, a pig on the label, too.
High on the Hog.
Yeah, High on the Hog.
That's my most memorable one. Now, this is an excerpt from Reeve Penin's book. Gunsing, I saw it once. He was not the Harkonnen goon of which the house had been so productive. He looked out of place there, slight, fair, with large, watery eyes. But the old bastard Gronok, his father, had to make the best of it. He had killed every son but Gunsing to better his chances of dying quietly in bed. That happy event could not be far distant, because Gronok had vices in number to match his jowls. I never smelled so foul a moral stench as to his castle. Where Gunsung, a flower among weeds, came from, only the Bene Gesserit knows.
Ah.
So it's just a little first exit there, but...
Well, true, because he would be in the breeding line.
Well, Reeve Penin wouldn't know that. I think he's using it more as an idiom, but you are taking that as like,
they would, but like, yeah, it's more of a poetic flair.
It's just saying that, like, where did this guy come from in this line? He's so out of it, like, only the Bene Gesserit would be able to understand the, because, like, again, outside people view the Bene Gesserit as, like, a religious institution.
Right.
Yeah, they have their hands in it, but, so, the father, Gronok. Is the one who's a typical Harkonnen through and through.
Okay.
We refer to them as the goons of which this house has been so productive.
The goons!
Yeah, I like that. So that's like this poet is coming here and being like, he's kind of seeing someone in his own cut of cloth, right?
Right.
Like, I can relate to Gunsling. I like this guy. He wouldn't have come to Gaiety Prime otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
He's here just to kind of hang out with
this guy. Was this when they still had infrastructure?
What do you mean?
Gaiety Prime. Because we know that it's gone to shit.
Oh,
Was it always this bad?
It's kind of like, I think it is always, like the industrialness and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't get the sense that like Harco's changed. Well, I guess rather the Imperial, or not the Imperial City, but the capital city is always sort of like, it's got that whitewashed look to it, right?
Right.
Wherever people of merit are going to go, I imagine that's still in place. And then, yeah, it's a gutter probably everywhere else.
Hmm. We know that with Vlad, he took like 80 years to save up the money to like do this assault on House Atreides.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that, maybe it was that 80 years that sort of like put everything to hell.
Like he just like stopped, you know, anything that refurbishes or rebuilds, right. Like all that money goes into the stockpile.
Exactly. It's like, yeah. It's not that we like said, oh, everything, we're taking all the money now. It's just, we're not going to fix anything.
I think you could totally say there could be a decline in the time. And then you could also completely look at it like the family in its long lineage has just been so awful that even with having like Gunsung take the mantle, he never had the chance to like fix it or make it better.
Right.
And we're going to see like he does try. He tries. Now this Reeve Pivensil's book continues with this next excerpt.
Okay.
And the lad is a musician. With nothing else to do, he studied the balisette in his room while the danse macabre ran on downstairs. He knew what was going on, though, and looked like he had learned to survive. When the blood stopped flowing and he became Baron Harkonnen, he vowed to improve the house. Poor fool! Nothing short of a stone burner would improve House Harkonnen. I was thankful just to get away before some ignorant sycophant with martial inclinations killed me.
Wait, okay, that's a lot to unpack.
That's a lot. So
he's referring to Gunsung.
Yeah, let's start at the beginning. Gunsung. Musician.
Plays the balisette.
Of course.
I already like him. He's great.
It's sort of like you can trust anyone with a balisette. Right. I don't think we've met a bad person with a balisette yet.
That's true.
And then he studies it while the dance macabre run on downstairs. So ooh, just like the intrigues of the palace. Yeah. Well, I was, yeah, yeah. You think literal?
Yeah.
Just plays. That's all that's happening.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking, well, if his brothers die around him as he's growing up. Yeah, the intrigues of the palace. He can see through all of that. He learned to survive. Now, it does follow this in the article with this blood stop flowing line. Mm-hmm. It said the blood flowing, quote unquote, still mentions refers to Granach's circulation, not to carnage following his death. And I think it's very weird for them to point out when like they also wrote
right
imaginary quote. I'm like,
this is very metaphorical.
And I'm like, did it matter if it was literal or not? It's a poet who's writing it. I don't know why they were so specific like, about that.
In case you didn't get it, this is what we really meant.
Yeah. I'm like, I didn't think he killed him. I didn't think it was just, yeah. So nonetheless, he becomes Baron Harkonnen. He tries to improve the house. And a stone burner, I don't think that's new to you, right?
Yeah.
That is going to show up in the series as we go. It's going to be very similar to like, remember the jet flare?
Yeah.
Being like a device kind of you set like that, a stone burner like melts through stone.
It's like thermite.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And I can't remember if it's like a handheld device or if it's like something you set up. If it's like, like kind of like a cutter sort of deal. Or
that's kind of cool.
But yeah, melts through stone. When they reference it, it's going to be like literally going through the scale of it. Like it melts through a planet's core.
Oh my God.
Like,
it just doesn't stop.
It's not like, oh, we're making a little cave here. It's like, no, this might jeopardize your planet. Like, this might
destroy. Why would you even use that?
Well, again, nothing.
How does it work?
Nothing short of a stone burner would improve House Harkonnen.
Oh,
that's why you would use it, Mike. Like, it's an eraser. Maybe that's what was on Harmontep. If we invented the stone burner.
Did that happen to Harmontep?
Something happened to fucking Harmontep. Now, Granach succumbed to a nervous disease that reduced him to a skeleton and barricaded himself in chambers beyond behind protection only a tyrant would find inadequate.
Oh. So
this is again saying, like, Gunsung didn't get his hands dirty here. Like, Granach just sort of deteriorated from some disease. And then in doing so, paranoia seemed to ensue.
Right.
And you just fortify yourself more and more. When the threat is coming from within.
That might be a common threat among the Harkonnens. That paranoia.
Yeah, that gets you in the end. Now, Gunsung, he was 23 at this time. He seemed incapable of controlling the rowdy house. But the unprepossessing heirs of whose story's history is full, Gunsung disapproved of appearances. So, you know about prepossessing?
No.
It's just like attractive or appealing in appearance.
Okay.
So it's just saying like of history where we have all these people where like you sort of reach a counter to like the methods of the father. Right. The father is super indulgent. The son is going to be way more conservative in his measure.
Okay.
Like, he saw what undid like the man before him. I think the vice versa can just happen. Someone who's like super conservative, you end up with something weirdly liberal and kind of out there on the edges. So Gunsung's like, I'm not going to be like that. I really want to like trim this empire in because there are a lot of existing threats right now. And the Harkonnen, the way Granach kind of lived at the end, I think a lot of underlings got more power than maybe Gunsung was happy with. You know, a lot of commanders coming up within the military ranks of the Harkonnens, they'll backstab to get ahead. So while his father lay on his deathbed, Gunsung knew his survival was in jeopardy. Taking advantage of the palace paranoia, he managed to reach his father's ear and coaxed from him an order for the execution of certain military officers and commanders of the elite guard. We cannot now verify the possibility of a coup, but Gunsung was privy to more knowledge than even his father suspected, and his later career demonstrated his ability to smell out power plays. When Granach died within days, Gunsung's placement of his own men in the vacated positions ensured his succession. So, like, right there, he switches into, like, that is the, kind of the Leto mode for me. Of, like, he sees his father going, moves, somehow gets by his side. It's like, father, whispers these sweet, sweet nothings. And I imagine the people that were executed were, like, the father's right-hand man.
Oh, probably.
But probably, like, how, you know how the Baron views, nobility over anything else.
Right, right, right.
It was like, I will turn my back on anyone. It's like, yeah, the Harkonnens come first. Like, who do you need killed, son? Like, I don't have anything else to lose.
Right,
like,
right.
Boom, boom, boom. Magnifood Incan will be, like, completely, like, strung up tomorrow. Sure. And that lets Gunsung get a degree of safety around him that's sort of, like, admirable by, like, other people within the palace and whatnot. Now, Gunsung goes on to marry Lady Mortana Cerobella, to cement a union.
Right.
Yeah, I remember her. Yeah, she's got death right in the name. You know, that one sticks out. And this cements a union to that house. She bore him 3 sons. Do you remember the 3 kids?
No, I don't remember all their names. I know there's Vlad.
Of course, of course. He is the youngest of them. The firstborn died in infancy.
Oh.
Which is going to be, yeah, you want that kind of overtone for this family, a shadow of death. The second was a disabled child, a club-footed giant named Araskin.
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 Gotcha.
Now, Granach also fathered Abulard Raban by the concubine Ganella Sorvag.
Ah!
He's going to quickly exit stage left when shit hits the fan. Like, I'm just going to go over here. And he has a great life, by all accounts. Raises shit children, but has a great life.
Was it his fault for the children? Like, the Baron sort of took them.
I mean, he's still their dad. He's not...
True.
He's not abdicated from that responsibility.
I guess true, but what are you going to be like, hey, can you not hang out with my kids as much?
He could have not had kids.
I guess.
Like, there's no reason for them.
I don't know. Okay, fine. I don't know.
I think either way, yeah, or just be like, oh, no, Vlad, stillborn. And, like, you just, every kid you have, you send a 2-pile. I'm just like, they didn't make it.
Send them to the orphan room on Caladan.
Yeah, oh, that would be so much better. Those kids had great lives. Yeah. They get, like, a tuition, you go to community college. Like, some of them work in the corrida, like, until it got shut down after that one dookie. Yeah. Now, let's continue on with Gunsung, though. He's married. He's got 2 kids, sorry. Ooh, that got really harsh. And he's going to set about building a strong foundation of financial investments and political alliances.
Okay.
No brainer, right? And he's going to use the help of his mentat, Mike. You remember the mentat?
I forget his name.
Chardon Cleese.
Chardon Cleese. I just think of John Cleese now.
Yeah.
As a mentat. Actually, he'd be a great mentat.
Oh, wait. Who is... Is that like...
Monty Python?
Thank you. Yeah. I was thinking Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Yeah. Okay. Are you imagining him as an old man or in his like younger days?
An old man, purple stains everywhere.
Okay, okay, like I don't know why I have like a, I think it's a Cleese. I have like a Mr. Clean kind of look. I'm just like bald, t-shirt, white t-shirt, arms crossed.
How about just like a bald and like jacked up John Cleese?
I like it with one earring.
With one earring, yes.
He's got that one gold earring.
Purple stained lips too.
Oh yeah, you can't get that up without
me. You do not want to mess with this guy.
No. No, you really don't. We're going to find out why.
Oh.
So, Chardon Cleese is going to help him out. And from the age of 12, he brings on his favorite son as well, Vladimir.
Ah.
To the dismay of Mortana, because we're like completely disregarding Araskin.
Even though Araskin is older than Vlad.
Exactly. He okay. should be like the son, but like he's not capable. And Gunslang, this is to his demerit. He doesn't even like acknowledge him as a person, essentially. That kid doesn't even exist. Now, life goes on. Now, aside from Cleese, chosen as much for his human sentiment as for his mentat abilities, Gunseng was the only friend Vladimir ever had. Among these three existed a trust and affection unique in the history of House Harkonnen.
Okay.
Well, this parallel should... Do you see the parallel, actually?
The
father, the son, and the mentat?
Oh, you mean with like Paul Leto and Thufir?
Ooh, even Leto, the old Duke and Thufir.
Oh,
but
oh,
yeah,
that would be a better one, I think.
I think I was going to go direct. Yeah, a contemporary like comparison of like, for a moment, they're in the exact same situation, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Good father, good mentat. The son?
But, I think it really depends on the son in this
case. It really does. And I just think it's interesting that they end up there and then how it marks it of like a unique point in history of like, oh, what could have been from that point on that just never was?
Oh.
What, you know, where House Harkonnen could have gone if only they'd resolved this fucking Canley. It seems like Gunseng would have been the man to do it.
Yeah.
I wonder if like within this setup, the old Duke on the Atreides side is the obstinate one, not willing to like hear him out or something because of family honor and like,
so sort of maybe
just trying to put the buck on them a little bit more of like, maybe there was this one time in history where like the possibility of reconciliation was close.
I could see him doing that because like the big factor we, and the most attributing, adjective we have for him is Rivera. The guy, like this guy, was just all about making a show of things.
Mm.
I think he would sort of just like add fuel to the fire in that case, just and, for like make a show of it.
And not like he doesn't do it at a good reason.
Right.
For the same reason the Leto didn't meet with the Baron of like, no, everyone knows your treachery. Of like, no. There's no reason we should believe Gunseng was the good Harkonnen. Right. Of like, guy, I met your father. Like, go fuck yourself. we're not meeting. Now, at the age of 49, Gunseng became involved in an unofficial canley with his wife's house, Cerobella.
Oh.
Yeah. It's like, we're killing each other under the table, Mike. It's not even, no letter to the Landsrad, no judge of the right to oversee this kind of match. This would eventually cause his death. Through deft market manipulations, he had gained several Chome franchises, for which Cerobella had been his chief rival. Success meant the dominance of one house over the other, so Gunseng moved carefully, lest Cerobella be provoked into declaring open war. So again, we're already like alluding, like, this is going to be what causes his death.
So why go for a secret Canley when you could do an open Canley?
That we're describing the secret Canley right now, like taking the Chome to kind of overthrow him. I think that's all the secret Canley.
Oh, okay.
And then otherwise, it's to not ruin the political marriage with his wife. I think it's like openly, you can't oppose me while I really push as many buttons as I can.
You're both on eBay. You're both bidding on the same thing. That motherfucker, what is he doing?
Yeah, but we can't call each other out on Facebook.
Exactly, like, exactly.
Yeah, gotta stay over there. Now, he knew he must eliminate Cerobella eventually. This is kind of untenable to keep this going, this tension that we're building up. The resourceful Chardon orchestrated a process verbal against the rival house, charging that Duke Fernandez conspired to increase his Chome holdings at the expense of House Carino.
Oh, yeah. Insult the emperor. Yeah,
I love it.
Hey, he's trying to take the emperor's money.
Just your face follow that plane. You're like, all right, where's it going to go? Oh, Carino, you you poor bastard.
You dog.
You didn't stand a chance.
Yeah, exactly. I guess from that point on, he didn't have to lift a finger to start a car, started appearing.
Like, I love this. So Cleese's arguments were bold but convincing. Duke Fernandez was discovered dead one morning and his planet occupied by a stabilizing force of Sardaukar.
Look at that.
I'm sorry, quote unquote stabilizing force. I hate that. Duke Fernandez Sarabella. Would have loved to meet him.
Yeah.
Not even a space name that's just Italian, but like...
It sounds great, though.
It's good. It's good. The death of her father turned Mortana's feelings toward Gunsling from indifference to hatred.
Oh, no.
Yeah. You know who's back on the scene, though? Reeve Perrin-Sill was again there for the last act in the drama. And then the article, like, all it is, Mike, from here on out... More excerpt, all from Sill's point of view while he's there on that final night.
Give me some poetry.
Ooh, not quite long form narrative. he switched it up in his later years.
Gotcha.
So, Reeve Perrin-Sill continues. I never planned to return to Gaiety, but Gunsung's surprising longevity gave me second thoughts. Everyone knew that Cerebella had united with Harkonnen in marriage to absorb and overthrow Gunsung, but they underestimated him. And when he succeeded in avoiding Chalmerky and poison needles in his clothes, I decided the relative stability of his reign was a good opportunity to visit. Right? That just sounds
everything's
like...
Everything's going well? Like, why not?
Yeah. I mean, what I love, too, is that it seems like everyone knew what the Cerebella plan was. Like, we're just waiting for Gunsling to get killed in the middle of the night, and then it doesn't happen for, like, 10 years. So you're like... All right, maybe this is going to be okay. I guess I'll go back and go see my buddy Gunsling. And I just happened to go back on this one night. Now, I will never know why Gunsling didn't execute Mortana out of hand following the overthrow of Cerebella. Perhaps he thought her powerless, retained a mistaken fondness for the mother of his sons, merely pitied her, or may simply have grown weary of deadly intrigue. Who knows? But he had become depressed, and as his judgment eroded, his command began to falter. Ooh. So now we come in with, like, a pretty good reading of where his friend is at, right? Of just, like, this man's changed a little bit, and, like, this moment where he could have solved all of his problems. Mm-hmm. He takes the Chome away from, like, this, whatever Chome directorships gave him over or power over Cerebella. Could have just quashed this house right there. Killed her, found a new wife, made a new political marriage, gone, you know, the wheels keep turning within the empire. But he doesn't. Something stays his hand.
Okay.
Moment of pity. Again, maybe just because he's a good guy. He's not an evil bastard. Okay. Maybe that's the way to phrase it. Because he does, again, disregard his crippled son. We can't overlook that one enough. And this continues. You had then but to visit a Harko watering place to hear of Araskin's exploits in the arena. Private affairs with drug slaves pushed into combat against the crippled giant while Mortana watched with relish. The tale went that Gunsung arranged these mortal minuets to satisfy the killer frustration of Mortana and the martial fantasies of Araskin.
It's like Araskin wants in. Mm-hmm. First of all. And also, I just wanted to take a point here. Harko water coolers. I want to know what those conversations are like on their 15 minutes.
Watering places. So I assume he means bars.
No, I imagine it's a water cooler.
Yeah. I think you've been in Arrakis so long that you're like, you do take that literally. Yeah. Like, you say watering hole, it must be water. What else do you guys treasure? Yeah, I can't imagine. Or, like, who's speaking freely at a Harko water?
That's true.
No, mm-mm. I would be silent.
Sort of looking around. Little Kara's just looking right at you.
Yeah. I love the boss.
But then again, they couldn't afford extra cameras at that point.
Oh, but you wouldn't know that.
That's true.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure none of them are hooked up, Mike. They're just like, it's a little LED light in the corner, but like... For the 1 in 10 that is real, you don't want to get caught talking on that one. But I think it's a valid point because they recycle all that metal.
Right.
Yeah, we're not putting cameras in places. We can't afford that shit. But what do you think of the parallel here of like a Raskin Raban? Kind of strong. Yeah. Just with the arena. And we only have a few like ways we contrast those two, but the Beast Reborn and how like animal-like we're presenting Araskin was.
Are we, so, yeah, I don't know. So well, do we know how he was crippled?
Araskin?
Yeah.
It seemed like it was from birth.
But no, like what was the condition like?
Oh, I'm just saying. I think like genetic or something. Like I think it was just something he was born with. I don't know anything else beyond that.
Oh, we just don't know what it was.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. We just called it crippled giant. So you can derive that from whatever. Clearly, it's enough that like they raise him, they keep him. He can operate in the arena.
I think maybe like a Andre the Giant kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think whatever it was, like, it was maybe just probably more physical than anything else, and that's all that Gunsling is reacting to. Hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a shame. It's a shame. Oh, if only we could have rescued him, like, put him in a better home. That's all we ever want to do with any Harkonnen, even Fade, like, for the love of God. Now, Araskin would gut his foes in fury. She would be the first to cry for a head. I saw one of these games myself and suspected that House Harkonnen was on the drop of a new nadir, one not long in coming.
Ooh.
Do you know the word nadir?
I have actually come across it recently, but I can't for the life of me recall what it means.
It might have been. This is one of my favorite words to come across. So back in, I'm not going to take the whole length of it, but
sure.
Zenith is the pinnacle point. It is also a clock company from like the early 20s.
Right, right.
And the opposite of the Zenith is a nadir.
That's, you know, we did talk about this. I think we talked about this on an episode too.
Well, what? Ooh, if it was on an episode, it'd be great.
An episode that hasn't aired by the time this will air.
I believe it was off, but like one of my subfolders for my games on like Steam, I have Nadir for just the shitty games that I'm never going to play again. Because I wanted the opposite of a Zenith.
Gotcha. And
boom, I dropped them all in there. Now, Gunsung had arranged a formal dinner to celebrate the spoils from Cerebella. Although that seems like a bad idea. Right out the gut,
oh,
right?
Oh, no.
With all the minor aristocrats in attendance. In his degeneracy, he permitted Mortana to sit at one end of the table. But given the occasion, it must have been the cruelest humiliation.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Hey, look at all the shit I took from your family. Like, remember this china that used to be at their house?
Didn't you used to sip from this teacup? Yeah,
exactly.
Isn't that great?
Aren't I a good husband? Now, Vladimir and Araskin were seated at his right and left, respectively.
Ooh.
This is great. I was present as poet in passage to warm up the evening with verse for a solo by Vladimir. So,
Vladimir.
Reeve Perrin Cyril, he's just the opening act. He's the opener for Vladimir, who's going to come out and bust a solo verse later on.
Oh, so he was a singer?
Yeah, but it never happened.
Oh.
Oh, because this is the last time Reeve Perrin went to Gaiety Prime, if you recall.
Yeah.
But that was going to be the headliner for the evening.
Okay.
Great. Yeah. What do you think he was going to do? It just gives me in verse, but we do know he was an amazing singer when we did the Perrin's backstory.
Right.
He had that beautiful voice. He used to have like rippling muscles. Like,
What happened?
I'm paragraphs away. Edge of my seat, Derek. That's so good. Alright. We'll continue on with repairing. Gunsung toasted the future prosperity of this house, whereupon all emptied their goblets. Oh, I guess we should do that as well, Mike. We got some wine here.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wait. What's in the goblet, though?
Do you think he stopped right at his at his lips? Then Araskin, already drunk and prompted perhaps by a signal from his mother, turned and brought his cup down on his father's head with all his might.
Jeez.
So his cup's empty. if I can just address one cup in the room.
Yeah. I think it was empty before they even sat down for dinner.
Gunsung fell dead and Araskin threw himself on his brother, squeezing Vladimir's throat with his huge hands.
One, holy shit. Power play. Two, what was that glass made of?
I
killed him on impact.
It sounds like the hand would have done it too. Just like, this guy is just an iron golem.
My God.
Smash.
It wasn't glass.
No. It's definitely like a good. You think maybe like plasteel?
Plasteel goblet?
Wouldn't that be dope?
This is some like Clue shit. Like, plasteel goblet in plasteel. The dining hall.
Yeah. With Mortana at the other end of the table.
Yeah.
Only two persons remained calm. You want to take a stab?
Mortana.
Yeah.
Who? The poet?
No. This poet just shit his pants, I think, a little bit. I can't imagine.
Vlad.
Okay.
I bet Vlad has a plan.
I was expecting you to choose like these bigger characters in
it.
It wasn't Vlad. It was Chardon Cleese, the Mentat.
Oh,
yeah.
How could I forget about Mr. Clean?
Mr. Clean over in the corner. He uncrosses his arms, Mike. Moving to the struggling figures, Cleese touched a needle to Araskin's neck, killing him instantly.
Oh, that sounds like Gom Jabbar shit.
Doesn't
right there.
It? Yeah, Cleese got fucking something.
Yeah.
Then he started to turn to the Baroness when Vladimir cried, "Hold!"
Ooh.
The boy was breathing heavily. Staring at his father, I could see that the fingers on his throat and the murder of Gunsing had worked their transformation. The new Baron was the picture of his grandfather, Granuk.
Oh.
We were at this, like, twofold path. Gunsung and Granuk. The Baron could choose one or the other. And this night, Granuk is what comes out of this, like, dining hall.
Because the brutality in this, like, five-second period of time alone.
And I think the brutality, the intimacy of the betrayal, like, it's your mother, it's your brother.
It's just, like, I feel like there should have been, like, I don't know. I think for this transformation for, like, Baron's a great guy, he's going to sing. I think maybe there was already a lot of this going on within his head beforehand. Or maybe there are other influences. Maybe Mortana was just, like, kind of a bad influence on Vlad as well.
Okay. Let's get it all the way in. We still got a little bit more of the scene to out here.
It just feels very forced, is all. You know what I mean? Like, this is the moment he snapped, but like, was he on the break of snapping before?
Oh, for sure. For
like,
I kind of see, and I'll make a little defense too.
Okay,
I'll at least play devil's advocate. Maybe not a defense. I don't want to take up this case fully. But let's continue on. So we have Vlad saying hold right there, right?
Yeah.
This transformation is taking hold. Vlad continues, "Don't kill her." That's what he says.
What happened to your beautiful singing voice, Vlad?
No, he already goes full baritone.
Oh, God.
Yeah, the contralto is gone. Cleese is standing there, and he tells her, like, it should have been done before. Even Cleese knowing, like, look, your dad fucked up.
Like, this was a bad choice. I said don't do this.
Mm-hmm. Now, the poet Reven kind of gives us a little quib and quotes here. Mortana must have been mad by then. She actually chuckled. So this woman is just cackling while this exchange is happening.
Oh.
No, said Vlad. I will take care of mother. You guards, see to the bodies now. There's like a long dash there when he gets to the mother. That pause wasn't just me embellishing. It's like he thought he was going to say something else, and he ends with mother. I just get like psycho, kind of like just creepy vibes.
Yeah.
Mortana.
He wasn't such a good boy before.
Mortana laughed as they took her away, and that was the end of the banquet. One heard the wildest rumors about the subsequent events. I give here guesses and gossip. After the immediate cremation of the two bodies, according to the Sadokar ritual, Vladimir visited his mother in her chambers. Some say the Black Widow actually offered herself to her son. Vladimir was driven to a frenzy. During those long hours before dawn, who knows how he dealt with his mother? One says he succumbed, another says he tortured her, another thinks he did both. Whatever the truth, Mortana was found dead, strangled in her bed the next morning. Now Vladimir had his chance to be either Granuk or Gunsang.
I think we already made that choice.
Yeah, right. Then the ship sailed when you saw he was Grunuk.
Yeah. Maybe this isn't the final draft for this guy. Maybe he was workshopping it a bit.
No, we sent it to print. That was that was the end of my article of our famous Harkonnen.
That's rough. So, I just want to know more about young Vladimir.
Well, let's step back to that moment of change there where you wanted to say, like, how far gone do you think he was at the moment his mother passed? And so the added bit, obviously, that you didn't know just yet of, like, her cackling there where she's already, she's gone crazy.
Yeah.
He has to now process that little bit of information, too, within that whole night. And I wonder if that maybe is also a contributing factor to what pushes him over the edge a little bit.
I think...
And we have 80 years before we see him. So, like, I think this just gets the snowball rolling. But, like, yeah, you want to say he's gone?
It's all downhill from here for sure.
I don't think there's any... That's the best case scenario I'm pushing, I'm penning, right?
But I think there maybe is a little bit of artistic embellishment here on this poet's side. Where, like, this is the moment where I had to choose between the father and the grandfather.
The poet or the author? We have, like, a two tiers of fakeness within this. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay.
I think he was already kind of fucked in the head before that. I think he had, like, the political authority. And the acuity of his father, Ginseng.
What I do like, too, is that, like, the poet doesn't know Vlad. He knows Gunseng a little more.
Yeah.
Right? He's Gunseng's friend.
Right. I think that there is a bit of instability there, though, like, imparted from his mother.
Yeah, so I'm saying that at least open, like, there could have been innumerable problems with Vlad that, like, he just didn't see because Vlad comes to court with the right bearing. He presents himself properly. But, like, there's all this festering rot inside of him.
And we don't know how he was treated by his mother either when you think of things. Because we know that Ginseng, you know, he doted on Vlad. It's like, you know, this is going to be the son that takes it all because the other one's just like a big bone meathead.
We have a little bit from the backstory was that she was always very angry that Araskin was her baby.
Right.
Like, exactly. She doted over
him. So do you think
that
she sort of took a little bit of that out
on Vlad?
On Vlad.
Yeah. That was colored in our backstory of him, of, like, Vlad's personal...
I think we even assume that, like, he probably has a lot of... I mean, not probably. He definitely has a lot of mother issues.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hands down. I mean, if not, a little of unresolved daddy issues of, like, he was brought into the fold and then his father was killed.
I just don't think this is the pinnacle moment where it all changed. It's like, no, it changed. Like, he was just sort of brought up this way. This was just... inevitable, I think, in a way, based off of his upbringing.
You think the seed was already there? I would like to think that even if Gunseng lived, I would like to think that if Gunseng lived, we would be pushed on this other course.
All right, tell you what.
But no, I want to hear, like, do you got a rebuttal for that? Do you think even with Gunseng that wouldn't be the case?
All right, if Mr. Clean John Cleese had...
That's fucking great. That's great. I don't know how long that took you to get there, but that's great.
If he had gone ahead and been like, sir, I know you don't want to, but, like, this has got to happen. He kills Mortana.
Yeah.
She's gone. Do you think, first of all, Raskin would have killed his father? Maybe. Maybe not. Who knows?
Independent of Mortana, I'm going to assume, like, I'm leaning into that crippled bit. Let's say that's full on, like.
You don't think he would have done it out of revenge?
I think if Chardon's, going to be able to see through to get rid of that threat, let's say he gets rid of this other threat.
True. But I'm just saying, like, who knows in either case.
Yeah.
Do you think that this would have still been a pinnacle moment for Vladimir?
Well.
Do you think he would have.
Wait, what is this moment then without Mortana there?
Okay, say Raskin still kills the Baron. Does Vlad now become this crazy?
Reframe that question a little bit. Are you saying, like, let's say if we got rid of Mortana out of the entire picture, do we still end up with an evil Vlad?
Yeah.
Is that kind of fair to be you're framing? Okay. We got rid of him. Vlad took us on. Let's say, I'm assuming that the feud between the Atreides and the Harkonnens is never resolved.
No, it's not.
Right.
But do you think he's still going to be the same Vladimir that he is now?
I think you still end up in the same plot that he's in now.
So then I guess my point is that is not the defining moment for him.
No. But I think even if you change Vlad's character, I think you still end up in the same plot. like what he's brought Leto into, that he's trying to kill and this and that. Maybe he doesn't try to rape his son, like, you know, like trying to get Paul as a prize. But I think you still end up with Arrakis as bait, the Emperor brought in, the Sadokar, because all it is for the Baron is Chome, right?
So, yeah, no, I get, exactly. No, I guess that just reinforces my point that, like, this is not the defining moment for him. He was already going to go along this path and be this person.
No, okay, yeah, but see, I'm disagreeing where I'm thinking the timeline doesn't change, but I think Vlad's moral compass would be dramatically different. But I'm just saying, I think no matter his moral compass, he would enact the same plan that happens in Dune.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
But I think this, all I think this night is shaping is whether he's like evil or good. Do you, you're thinking he would change his plan otherwise?
No, I don't think he would have changed his plan. I think he, I don't, I'm not saying he would have changed anything. My whole point is that I think he was always this way. I don't think that this was the defining moment.
Defining moment in the timeline.
In his timeline, yeah.
Yeah. I think what we're getting at here is that, like, we both agree no matter what, he ends up evil. And it's just a matter of, like, does it start here or not? Because, like, either way, even if, like, I think even if he ends up on the moral right, he still does all the evil shit in Dune. And
well, no, absolutely.
You're thinking, like, yeah, even if you pull Morbella out, you're thinking, like, that wasn't the corrupting influence. Like, there's something
unless
in him
he,
that's,
unless
like,
she was removed, yeah. Like, right after, you know, he was born or something like that, and he was raised differently because of that. I think because she wasn't influenced on his life for up until this moment.
Mm.
That's why he's so messed up. I think, yeah, no, I don't think there's any hope for him. I think he was just screwed at birth, in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like whether birth or circumstance.
Yeah, she's just a weird one. Gunsang, what are you doing, buddy?
Yeah,
Political marriage. End up working in the end, anyways.
No political marriage does. You know what you got to do? You got to marry your concubine. That's how you find true happiness. That's the message.
Jessica sneezing in the corner. Like, oh, I'm like, someone's thinking about me.
That's the message of Dune, is marry your mistress.
Yeah.
That's what Frank was trying to tell us. Don't get married.
Works for Fenring.
Yeah. No, he got married.
Yeah.
No, but that's not marrying your mistress. I'm thinking, like, Leto didn't ever get married. He found happiness in the measure. I was trying to say the subverting the normal.
Okay.
You're right. No, of all the people, though, Fenring is probably the only person who's truly happy.
Yeah.
I think him and Margot
him
are,
and his
like,
wife are just, like, they're conniving, but they're, like, they understand each other so well.
It's that balance between your work life and your personal life. They really have it. Like, yeah. They have it all, and they just get to enjoy it. And honestly, through the ups and downs of everything, totally neutral for them.
I could see them being like secret agent married spies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but they don't have that
exactly.
Fight scene.
Honey, hand me the gun.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to take this shot. This one's mine, okay?
Pass it back and
you
forth.
Get the next one.
You can kill the next soup doctor.
But yeah, no, I just think that's maybe we spent too much time talking about this, but I really think I really think that Vladimir, it was his upbringing that did it. It wasn't this pivotal moment at this dinner. I think that's embellishment from this poet.
Reeve Perrin, right?
Yeah,
friend of Gunsling.
Well, I mean, that's the thing too. Like he is a writer. Don't just do this for the sake of doing it. You got to make it entertaining. You got to make it somewhat fluid.
You want to add an Irulan level of like,
yeah,
this guy need to make a buck too out of all of this.
Well,
and,
yeah, no, but my point is though, like he's adding a narcissistic flair to this. Mm-hmm. I don't think this was the defining moment for Vladimir. I think he was already way well past this. This is just the moment that he saw. He only visited this place twice.
Well, hey, he just didn't ever want to go back.
He's definitely not now.
Yeah, probably never again.
Okay.
That does not ever show up. Dude, yeah, there's a lot with Harkonnen. It's all speculative, but isn't that really great? Bringing it up. And again, father lost in the shadow, for sure.
Oh, for sure.
I wish Gunsling got more mentioned, like, in Dune. Or even a mention, really.
Yeah.
We don't get much of the Baron's backstory.
We don't really know what the relationship between Gunsling and the Emperor is either.
No. Oh, that didn't come up in this little side story. Yeah. That would have been kind of cool to be like, I imagine we know the Baron, the contract of Arrakis has been during his lifetime. It's only been 80 years, right? And for a lot of that has been under Raban as his like sub like little right. thief, right? Like you go run that kind of show. So I wonder how maybe overlooked or like unknown Gunsung was to the Emperor or the Imperial House.
I don't know.
You know, certainly he would have been conniving. Cleese.
There, I mean,
what did you just call him?
Mr. Clean John Cleese.
Clean John Cleese. Like, it's a Jean-Claude Van Damme kind of name, Clean right? John Clean John Cleese. I'm like, oh, that's so good.
He looks scary.
Because he polishes that dome. You just see your reflection in it.
Oh, and God. You see
the fear in your own face. But we've gone through many a Harkonnen, Mike. You got any other questions on Harkonnen?
No.
We get to close this this Between Two Dunes out?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, that was great.
That was ridiculous.
That's a good little dive into it. I'm glad we got to dive so much into the leading up into the Baron.
Yeah.
But why don't we take a dip into some more familiar territory?
Oh,
something. It's kind of like, you know how every now and then we abandon a Sietch and we move down to one down south and it's been, we got to air it out so a little often. Bit. We're like, oh, what's this in the corner? Oh, it's a glossary game.
Ah!
Bust that one
on. Time for the glossary game. I got a word for you.
We're
running out of words.
Of course. We better be.
Yeah, not a whole lot here. I've been trying to find one. I'm just going to take some fun ones here.
Yeah. Was it just like something playful in the, like, I mean, that's got a lot of consonants.
Gone over everything sand related. I think I have to go to some things that we've already talked about, but maybe I've just sort of skipped over a little bit here.
Oh, were you actually familiar with it when you read it?
Yeah.
That's kind of
cool. I can't remember where
that's kind
I
of
read it, but
cool.
I remember I read it in the text and was like, what is that? And I looked it up and I'm like, okay, maybe I'll save that for a rainy day. Maybe I won't ask Derek about that one.
Have you gotten to one yet where like you look at it and you're just like, I know what chapter that's in?
Yeah, definitely.
Ah, that's good. That's good. That's like a threshold moment for you.
All right, your word today, Derek.
Okay, on the glossary game.
Opafire.
Opafire. Ooh, 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 ooh. O-P-A-F-I-E-R? Okay.
Or F-I-R-E.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Because you can spell fire.
Nope. Clearly can't. Not if you hit reverse 30 seconds on your podcast. I have a definition in mind, and then obviously I'm going through that moment of second guessing myself. Mm-hmm. You're like, you're an idiot. You're stupid. You don't know anything. But I want to say like opafire lens is what comes to mind for me. And
like an oil lens?
No, not like an like the oil lens. More like the I think I'm only thinking of the bit that they used out in the desert to collect dew. It was sort of like not a wind trap, but like a dew trap, and it reacted from sunlight. So either is clear or Mike, what's the word for you can't see through it?
Opaque.
Thank you so much. opafire, opaque kind of deal. And based on the amount of sunlight, like I think it's once sunlight comes through it, it will turn opaque and it absorbs the mm-hmm. heat. And then when the light's gone, it will turn clear so that it drops temperature real quick.
Oh.
Like it'll light goes right through it. And that's to collect the dew from the air to kind of condense the moisture in the air. So I think it's an opafire lens, and I want to say it's that kind of thing, but I'm really...
You're like, you...
Otherwise, I'm like, I'm clinging to fire. I'm like, does that fucking fire mean something?
Where's
like
jet flare? From?
Yeah, but I want to go with that kind of glass, or I'm not going to claim glass, but a material that reacts to light to collect dew in
right.
some form.
Right.
That's what I'm leaning towards.
Well, I'll tell you right now, I don't think it's that. I don't recall it being used for that.
Okay.
One of the rare opaline jewels of Hagel.
Oh, totally. No, I know exactly what this is. Yes.
Ah.
Yes. An opafire gem or an yeah. opafire jewel? Yes. Ah, son of a bitch.
And that Hagel is where we got the quartz from for the throne as well.
Exactly. The Hagel yeah. quartz throne.
But yeah, no. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Opafire.
And now I wonder what other kind of gems you're going to find on Hagel if it's just known for all these like rare gems.
Right, right. And like the few that Frank does include in the book.
Yeah.
I think there is one more. Opafire and Hagel stand out to me as the ones that come up. We're obviously the throne and the Hagel or the opafire, I think will turn up in some like jewelry and stuff at time to time.
Speaking of, you know, now that I think about it, because I was thinking of rare gems. And opals in general, I think that's definitely based off of an opal.
I would hope so. Yeah. What are you thinking?
Well, there are specific types of opals out there, and some of them are just incredibly rare. I want to say it's like black opal, or...
I was going to say, actually, you know what? I love fancy dice. We play D&D and Dungeons & Dragons and stuff, and one of our friends, we've been purchasing fancy dice, he has the opal set of dice that have that great like white color. They're almost like pearlescent in the what you see through it.
Oh, looking up real quick, it is black opal. I was right. So it's one of the rarest opals there is. It's so gorgeous, and it is incredibly rare. Most people find them in Australia. Mm-hmm. It's like the best place to get them, but it's like in mines that are miles deep.
Whoa!
And you have to be very careful when you mine them because
what kind of opal was it?
It's called a black opal.
Black opal, okay.
And it sells for $15,000 a carat. That's Australian dollars.
Do you have a picture of it?
Yeah, I could
bring something. Is it like something similar to like obsidian? It's sort of like
Oh my god, it looks like a rainbow in the dark.
So like opal in general has like that kind of oil sheen to it, where you see that whole like purple through yellow rainbow coloration as you like. Yeah. Oh, that is beautiful. You're showing me a picture right now where, like, that looks like a little, it's like a circular, like, imagine like a black gem, and it's like a galaxy hidden within it of, like, light that you see bursting out. But
the thing
with
is,
the refraction of the.
Even in its veins, mm-hmm. the veins within the rocks, that's what it looks like as well.
So, all right, Mike, I kind of lied to you. I am able to search through the book for you. I found your section. Opalfire is mentioned once in the book. Would you like this paragraph?
Sure.
You might even be able to pin down when it is in the book.
All right, sure.
I would appreciate that if you could. And you'll see why in a second. The Baron moved down the lane. It's one of those chapters. Yeah. It's the Baron chapter.
The Baron.
The Baron moved down the length of the hall with that peculiar waddling glide imparted by the necessities of guiding Suspenser Hungwait. His jowls bobbed up and down. Suspenser jiggled and shifted below his orange robe. Rings glittered on his hands, and opafire shone where they had been woven into the robe. At the Baron's elbow walked Fade Rautha. His dark hair was dressed in close ringlets that seemed incongruously gay above sullen eyes. He wore a tight-fitting black tunic and snug trousers with a suggestion of bell at the bottom. Soft-soled slippers covered his small feet.
So this is like the start of book three, more or less.
This is the chapter where we went out for the gladiator match. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He was wearing bell bottoms and the Baron had a cape on. But it was weird fashion choices all throughout.
It was woven throughout his robes, though. That's crazy.
So it's underneath that orange cape would have been like these amazing glittering rocks with like little galaxies in them, right?
Yeah.
Like that adds actually a level to it.
Here's the thing.
Because, I didn't appreciate.
Looking at the pictures of black opal, I want to say that opafire is probably like a bright orange kind of color. And like, we know that like that's part of their heraldry and their colors, I think.
Of what? What colors?
The orange. Because they have orange pennants all over the place.
Oh, okay. And
he's got his orange little cape, his orange robes.
I know, I totally... You, good catch. Yeah. Thank you.
Because I looked up recently with Harkin and stuff, and for making a little picture for our voting, that cobalt is one of their colors as well. So like orange and blue.
Yeah.
I don't know where cobalt comes up, but I keep hearing things of like Harkin and blue.
I think it's... we had one of our persons reach in. I can't go back to the... I think it was on Instagram, but they said that it was in Heretics of Dune or Chapter House Dune. They mentioned the colors.
Oh.
I think they give them colors. Oh, you know what? It was at least that they gave us the emblem for the Harkonnens. Frank decides later on. I think he must tilt the hat later on.
Griffin.
Like kind of tilt the hat later on. Yeah.
But that's pretty cool. So I think it looks like black opal, except it's orange instead of that like orange and yellow or red instead of that blue.
Even if
green.
It was just like their house colors somehow in there, like if you could like shape it or color it in some manner.
Yeah. But I just think like fire, like opal, that makes sense. That'd be really cool.
Yeah. I hope too it is even like looks like flame more so than it does in like those pictures.
Exactly. Well, like Black Opal uses all like the cool colors. I think Fire Opal, Opal Fire would use all the hot colors. No, I mean like you laugh.
I thought you meant cool as in like as a measure of like how much I like it.
No, as
like,
in color theory, cool the cool flint. Yes. Like, no, god damn it. Yes. All right, we're done. We're done.
We're done. We have gotten there. We've reached the end of this this whole section.
You guys know where to find us. We're not gonna do all the plugs and all that jazz.
Yeah. You know, if you made it this far, just send us a diss trans at spiceworldpod@gmail.com. Yeah. What more can we ask maybe for, really?
Maybe you can shed some light on our debate about Vlad and when he truly turned evil.
Oh, yeah. When do you guys feel it was? Think it's now? Think it's later? Think there was something that we missed maybe in his lifeline?
That'd be good.
There are many possibilities. But I think until we get an inch of that mic, the spice must flow. I do have no idea what the fuck we were talking about. That Hoggle, Quartz.
And you're just like, you know who else?
And Opal Fire is the word. No, I even forgot the segment we were in, Mike, of looking it up. I'm just like, what were we even doing?